Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:28 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is August 24th. I thought we'd kick off with the credit impulse in China because it's a particularly interesting chart in a number of different respects. The first is that we had the big pop in the upside in 2008, and then they tried to remove a lot of that credit because they were worried about a bubble, and it contributed to a slowdown in growth. And in 2012, then they had to pump it all back in, and then they tried to take it back out, and they were so successful in taking it back out that it really did give everyone a scare in terms of growth, so they had to pump even more back in. Well, then they started really worrying about some of the credit abnormalities that were occurring in the market, and they started to take it out again, and they started leaning on the banking sector and leaning on the private sector and the private lenders and the private lending clubs and the shadow banking sector. And that was all going fine, and then it started to threaten the outlook for the wider economy. So then in 2019, they started to ease up again, but they were determined not to flood the market with liquidity again. So prior to the pandemic, it did start to come back down again, and that was clearly evidence of China attempting to get out of this cycle of having to flood the market with liquidity every time there was a bit of a hiccup in the property markets. But then, of course, we had the pandemic, and they had to flood the market with liquidity again, and it got in excess of 4 trillion yuan. And since at the beginning of this year, they have been taking it back out again. And I think it's worth just looking at what this means, because this isn't the action of a central bank that's working in an independent manner. The kinds of policies that we see in China tend to be joined up. So when we look at the H-share market, the credit impulse peaked around the beginning of this year, and the H-share index has been trending downwards. Now, it would be very simple to look at the constituents of the index, and then you would have a pretty good answer for why the stock market has been underperforming, because you've got Alibaba, Tencent, Meituan, Xiaomi. Those are some of the largest constituents, along with the banks and insurance companies, in the index. And of course, the government has been leaning on them because they have been largely unregulated. So that's one way of thinking about it. And then they've also become increasingly powerful, which is another way. So there are plenty of rationales for why they had to clamp down on the rapacious pace of growth in the technology sector. But the reality is that it coincided with an attempt to also clamp down on speculation in the property market, trying to rationalize the excess capacity in the steel market, then also trying to exert greater control over the economy, clamping down on any kind of threat from the Delta variant. So they locked down half the economy. So it wasn't simply that they were removing liquidity, but they were doing all these other things at the same time. So again, it was a good example of how policy in China tends to follow an arc. So there has been this cycle, and it looks increasingly likely that it's like a 3 to 4 year cycle. So if the peak in the credit cycle was back in 2020, well, I think we can then conclude that perhaps the next peak would be somewhere around 2024. And the credit impulse is starting to rise again. And we have seen in the past that it doesn't go up immediately, that we get a stab on the upside, and then it wobbles around for a while, and then it pops on the upside. We've seen that on a number of occasions. So it's likely that we've seen the low, and now potentially there is the scope for additional upside. So we are now starting to see some dip buying coming through for The technology sector, the H share index, is right at the lower side of this range that's been forming over the last decade. We're starting to see some evidence of support coming through. Tencent, for example, has pulled back extremely violently over the course of the last few months, but it is demonstrating at least near-term support in the region of the 400 level. So it's increasingly likely that we're going to see a mean reversion bounce coming through in a number of these very oversold markets. But again, if they all fell together, they might not necessarily be connected in a conventional sense. Why would anyone be a buyer of steel or iron ore, for example, which is this chart, and Alibaba? But they're both implicated in this arc of policy that China has implemented over the last year. So we've had a significant drawdown in iron ore prices, where the peak was in excess of $250 a few months ago, and as recently as last week, it was trading a lot closer to 130. So we've had a meaningful pullback, and the upward dynamic that we saw yesterday and follow through today is suggestive that we have a low of at least near-term significance, and certainly the potential at least that we're going to see a reversionary rally. And this is also helping to support the outlook for the wider industrial resources sector. So copper prices had bounced as well. They were in additional positive territory in here today and continuing to find support in the region of the trend mean. And that's also been beneficial for the oil price. So oil prices had been up in a firm manner yesterday and followed through on the upside in here today. So now we have the upside key reversal with follow through on the subsequent day. This is a low of at least near term, potentially medium term significance, and it greatly increases the potential that prices are going to go right up and post new recovery highs and most likely test the $80 area. Quite how much further oil prices will go beyond that is anyone's guess. And gold, of course, has also rebounded over the course of the last 10 sessions and is still closing above the $1,800 level. It's got additional work to do in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, but that was certainly a big failed downside break below $1,700. It's completely unwound, the big decline over 2 days, and I think there is clear evidence of dip buying going on in the gold market. Now, when we think about the wider commodity complex, there has been obviously the frost scare in Arabica coffee in Brazil, and they are pulling out the dead trees, but in many respects, they are replacing them, not with new trees, but with corn and soybeans. So that is, I think, increasing the potential that we could have supply deficits coming through over the subsequent years. It's very similar to the kind of condition that happened with orange juice. And all the way back in 2004, I was in Orlando chatting to people there and suggesting that perhaps the orange juice price was close to a low. And I was roundly told that I was a fool for suggesting that because nobody was drinking orange juice anymore. And didn't I know that there were whole groves being torn out and replaced with track housing? So subsequently, orange juice went on a tear, and it's been in that range now for most of the last 15 years, and it's rallying from the lower side at present. Of course, orange juice is also a major source of vitamin C, which I'm surprised doesn't get more advertising against the background of a pandemic, and particularly from the major manufacturers of orange juice. Well, when we then think about the wider commodity complex, soybeans continue to be quite firm in the region of the trend mean. So we had a meaningful pullback, but There are still drought conditions in a number of the major producing areas, and that's supportive of firm pricing overall. And then wheat is also a major food commodity, and it has a clear succession of higher reaction lows. Now, it's been a very choppy uptrend, but it's a clear base formation completion. And as long as it's holding the 600 cent level, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Now, when we think about rough rice, again, another major industrial, excuse me, agricultural commodity, then prices haven't when we haven't really rebounded in as abrupt a manner following the contract change in the middle of 2020, but still quite firm overall. And when we zoom in and just simply look at an individual contract, well, there's been a range forming over the course of the last 4 or 5 months, but the price is holding this range, which is well above the prices that we saw a year ago, and there's still the sequence of higher reaction lows overall. So there is still potential here that we're going to have additional upside for commodities generally. And certainly the potential that China's credit impulse is turning around should be supportive of the view that this breakout from the CRB index to complete the base formation will be sustained. And then when we think about the raw industrial commodities, which these are spot rates for the industrial commodities, then it is really quite overbought in the short term. And right in the region of the peak from back in 2011, I think it's inevitable at some stage that we're going to have at least some pause in consolidation, but we haven't really seen any of it yet. And then when we look at the Baltic Dry Index, it has clearly broken out of its base formation, and that base formation lasted for the better part of a decade, and it continues to push on the upside. And let me update the chart because prices are now north of 4,000, and this is looking increasingly like an uptrend overall. So when we think about the broader inflationary outlook for the economy, it's being led by commodities, but it's also being led by supply deficits. So there's plenty of demand and there's a supply mismatch, and there are difficulties with semiconductors and there are difficulties with rising commodity prices. And then on the other side of it, then there's a difficulty in the mismatch between the kinds of jobs that are on offer and those that people really want to take on. And that's going to take time to bed down. So when we hear central banks talking about raising rates, well, I think it's unlikely that they're going to taper when our first taper and then obviously raise rates, that they're not going to rush into that. And they've been doing a good job of talking the market into it and jawboning their way towards it, but talking about it and doing it are two different things entirely. So when we think about the 10-year yield, well, the one thing that we can certainly think about is that we have a higher reaction low, and the yield has broken the sequence of lower rally highs. So we are getting these little stabs on the upside, and it's looking increasingly likely that we will see the yield pushing on the upside. But I think it is less about inflation and more simply about supply and demand, because the US government is talking in real terms about massive spending, and it's going to represent a very significant increase in the supply of bonds. And the Federal Reserve will be expected to buy them and to facilitate this massive fiscal expansion. And it's not like central banks haven't been trying to encourage politicians to spend more over the course of the last 15 years. Now that they're in fact doing it, well, It's not really for central banks to tell them what they should and shouldn't be spending the money on. Of course, the rest of us can think about that and think, well, spending it all on current expenditure doesn't seem like a particularly sustainable path over the medium to long term, but that's always going to be tomorrow's problem from the perspective of politicians. They're much more in the business these days of placating very restive populations. And this is equally true just about everywhere. So Europe is also in a position where the ECB is in no mood for removing assistance. And central bank or the central bank is taking on and has taken on a lot of additional responsibilities, and they're the banking supervisor, and now they also have lots of additional mandates in addition to their inflation mandate. And then you have the potential that the next government in Germany is going to be more spending minded, and that will open the floodgates in terms of easing up on the ability of other countries to also spend. So that's, and of course, the fact that the ECB is buying every bond that Italy is issuing is also supportive for that market, and it has been able to sustain the move up and out of this 5-year range, and this looks like a base formation completion. It's a pretty similar story for the Spanish market, and there's more banks in Spain, so it looks more like a banking index overall, but it is continuing to hold the region of the trend mean, and it remains in a bull market generally. When we look at the sorry, that's the Euro Stoxx 50. I was looking for the banking sector. So when we think about European banks, they've been written off wholly by investors, but it looks very similar to the Spanish IBEX. It continues to find support in the region of the trend mean, and it's coming back up and into the base formation. So, this does look like a failed break downwards in 2020, and now the recovery overall, and the willingness of Europe to look away from fiscal austerity and more towards additional stimulus, well, then that's all beneficial overall. Now, when we think about the wider market in Europe, well, the UK is plotting its own path, but it's in a similar situation with regard to raising interest rates in a hurry. So the FTSE 250 continues to push on the upside and remains really quite firm. And now we can think about the FTSE 100, where it has been able to push back above the 7,000 level and is looking increasingly likely that it will be able to complete its own range overall. When we then think about Japan and the outlook there, well, the Japanese market has continued to find support in the region of the trend mean. The TOPIX index has been outperforming the Nikkei this year, and it has certainly pulled back less and is bouncing more right now. The second section has been consolidating in the region of the upper side of this range, and it's steadying again now from the region of the trend mean. So, there is certainly the potential here that more value plays will start to attract attention, despite the fact that the Nasdaq has been able to push on the upside and continues to really stun in terms of its ability to hold these aggressively high levels. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.